hundreds of industrial robots and other heavy machinery are being auctioned off this week as the surviving remnants of the General Motors plant in Janesville get sold piece by piece under the site owner. We're going to look at how Janesville and Rock County have changed over the past decade with GM's exit. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. But first, let's check in with Pledge Central as we ramp up the spring membership drive here at Wisconsin Public Radio. And Cheryl Gasser in the studio with me. Good morning.
Good morning, Kate.
You count on the Ideas Network for great discussions, and it's your gift of any amount that makes these discussions possible. Listener support is the single largest source of funding for WPR programs, and that's why your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
If you've already given during this drive or you're a sustaining member, thank you so much for your support. We have an hourly goal to get 15 pledges in the door by 8 o'clock this morning, and I know we can do it. I know you will come through for us. These goals are set up to make sure that WPR has the money to pay for the programs you rely on, like the morning show.
Let's meet this goal. It starts with your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
So what does public radio mean? Well, it's special. Public radio means listener-supported radio.
And while we do appreciate business contributions and federal and state tax dollars, it's listener support at the end of the day. That is the single largest source of funding for WPR programs, plain and simple. Your contribution of any amount really matters. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Here at WPR, we are listener-supported radio, and that means that pledge drives are very important times to hear from you. If you haven't donated before, we'd especially like to hear from you right now.
Any amount you give makes a difference. It does. Giving takes just a few minutes of your time. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and make a contribution of, say, $10 a month or $120. And when you do, it'll feel great, and you make the WPR programs you count on every day possible.
We have a special thank you gift this drive. Reach out and read Books for Kids.
I'm Dr. Dipashin Afsarya. I'm an associate professor of pediatrics at the University of Wisconsin, and I'm founding medical director of Reach Out and Read Wisconsin. What we do through Reach Out and Read is use primary care checkups and hand the book directly to the child. It's about familiarity with the books. They start to get it, getting this idea that print conveys information. It's about associating it with a loving, tender moment with their caregiver.
Do two good things at once when you support WPR programs and ask for the Reach Out and Read Books for Kids thank you gift. Give $10 a month or more. Here's how.
You go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your donation in support of the programs that you count on. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with Cheryl Gasser. We're raising the money that keeps Wisconsin Public Radio and all the programs that you enjoy on the air. And whether your pledge is $10 a month, whether it's $100 a month, we appreciate and we count on your gift.
And giving to WPR is so very easy. All we need is your name, some contact information, the amount of your pledge, and how you'd like to pay.
Takes just a few minutes to make your gift to Wisconsin Public Radio, and those few minutes fund your daily listening. Your support right now really makes a difference. It does. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Take a minute to think about what you value here on the Ideas Network. Well, your reasons for listening are the same as your reasons for donating. We are looking for 15 pledges this hour, and we can make it happen with you. You make WPR possible when you give. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
In this pledge drive, you can do two good things at once when you make your donation to support WPR programs. You can ask for the Reach Out and Read thank you gift. Your thank you gift will provide books for young kids, and that's available when you give $10 a month, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's also a great time to become a sustaining member. You set up easy, convenient, ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card. You can get started with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Demolition work is underway this month at the former GM plant in Janesville. The physical work of tearing down the plant on 265 acres, that task will take at least a year, probably more, according to the site owner. Here we are about a decade out from the plant's closing, and we want to check in on how Janesville and Rock County have fared during this time of transition. Amy Goldstein has been a staff writer for 30 years at the Washington Post and now focuses on healthcare policy. Her book is Janesville, an American Story. It came out last year around this time. It's won the Financial Times and McKinsey Business Book of the Year Award and the J. Anthony Lucas Book Prize. Amy, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be back with you.
Well, give us some characteristics as to how much Janesville relied on this plant. A brief history lesson, if you will, to how integral GM was to Janesville.
GM was really integral to Janesville. It has a long history in town. General Motors arrived in Janesville just after World War I when a man named Craig, who was running a very successful tractor and other farm implements company at the time, went to the head of General Motors, which was a pretty new company then, and persuaded the owner to take over his plant. And that was the beginning of General Motors. So General Motors began making tractors in Janesville just after World War I, and in 1923, it converted to making Chevys. So if you think about that, that was a lot of generations of people for whom this was the best working class work imaginable. It was paying, at the end, $28 an hour. So those were pretty good working class wages. And not only General Motors, but because the plant existed, there were a lot of supplier companies that were providing goods and services to the assembly plant. So there were a few thousand additional jobs that existed in town because General Motors was there. So all this ended, more or less, just before Christmas of 2008. The last Chevy Tahoe, a very fancy black SUV, rolled off the assembly line. And there were a lot of people who gathered at the assembly plant that day, not only workers who had been told by the company that they could not come in if they didn't want to on that final morning, but many did. Mm. And retirees came back. So they were all standing together. And, you know, as I say in the book I wrote, they were cheering and weeping and hugging at the site of this last Tahoe that came out. Now, there was a small contract that kept a few people working on a foreign vehicle, for a few more months. But that day, December 23rd, 2008, was really the last day of big production in Janesville at General Motors.
Well, in the world at that time, we are starting to get into the Great Recession, the throes of the Great Recession. What ultimately led to the GM plant's closure?
Well, the day that General Motors announced that it was going to close the Janesville assembly plant, which was in early June of 2008, it actually announced four plants were going to close. So Janesville was one of them. And this was happening because, as you said, the country had entered the Great Recession the previous December of 2007. So the economy was just terrible. And General Motors, in particular, was having a really hard time financially. And, you know, people debate whether it was poorly managed or whether it was just the economy made things kind of, you know, insurmountably bad for a while. But the company was really sliding towards bankruptcy, and just about a year after the announcement that the Janesville plant was going to close, the company could declare bankruptcy. And if you remember, there were big debates in Washington over the federal government giving automakers loans to help them try to avoid bankruptcy, which, you know, they didn't. I mean, they eventually climbed out of it. But it was just a very bad time financially for the company.
So what were the challenges that Janesville faced after GM's closure when this really good work, union wages, went away? This is thousands of people out of work at once.
That's right. According to federal figures, in 2008 and 2009, in that part of southern Wisconsin, about 9,000 people lost work during those 2 years. So this is a lot of people losing jobs. And these were, you know, as we were saying, these were very well-paid jobs. So it was really a shock. And that was, you know, why I came to town and for several years was trying very hard to, you know, get to know people in Janesville and understand what losing work meant and what people did about it. And it was a really pretty traumatizing experience. These were jobs that, you know, in many cases, not only did the current workers have, but their, you know, dads and aunts and uncles and grandparents had had, because the way you got into General Motors was often to sort of have a chit from somebody who could bring you in.
Mm.
So there were, you know, families that had thought that this work would go on forever. The other thing that I found happened for a long time was there was a very understandable, what I would call denial. Because over the decades, the assembly plant had sometimes gained products and lost products, so it was manufacturing different vehicles over time, there was a pretty widespread belief that it was only a matter of time before General Motors gave Janesville something else to manufacture. And that obviously didn't happen in the end. But for years, the plant was in a status called standby. It was kind of a limbo. And it was the only plant in all of General Motors that was in this limbo status. And that meant that absolutely nothing was happening inside this enormous auto plant. But it was eligible to be reopened if certain market forces warranted it.
And they had to keep everything able to ramp up inside, so all of the mechanical stuff, all of the machinery had to be just kept in ship shape, ready to be rebooted at any moment?
Well, there were a lot of the innards of the plant that were auctioned off.
Okay.
Because the odds were that if the plant ever reopened, it was going to be making something different. So it would need different equipment and more modern equipment for a new vehicle if one ever came along, which it didn't. So the plant was, you know, not entirely empty, but it was partly hollowed out not too long after the jobs went away. But the point that people were in denial, I think, really, in some cases, slowed people from thinking through what should they do next. And I think it was hard for people to figure out what was a different kind of work that they could, one, find because jobs weren't coming back to Janesville very fast, and two, would pay anything like the wages that they had been earning, which was a pretty impossible thing to find for a lot of people.
So they were being filtered, these displaced workers, kind of the sterile word to say for it, they were being really filtered toward going back to school to be retrained, to training in a completely different profession. How did that work out?
Well, that was something I was very interested in this work that I did for my book. Janesville has one of Wisconsin's technical colleges, Black Hawk Technical College. That was a small school that was just inundated with laid-off factory workers. It had, over a couple of years, the biggest enrollment increase in all of Wisconsin's technical colleges century-old history. Lots and lots of people were going back to school, and there was a lot of federal money that was flowing into Janesville to help these people, you know, with tuition and costs of textbooks and other costs of being students. So this is what a lot of people were doing, and in addition to getting to know a lot of people who were factory workers returning to be students and people who were teaching at the college and people who were the administrators there, I also worked with a couple of labor economists on a statistical analysis that looked at what happened to people who had been laid off around this time in this part of southern Wisconsin who had and had not gone back to school. And while some people did well, on balance, the results were really sobering. What we found was that the people who had not retrained were, after a few years, this is by 2011, 2012, so it's not right up to the current moment, but it was a few years after all these good factory jobs had vanished from town, the people who had not retrained were more likely to be working, were more likely working all four seasons of the year, and were less likely, if they were working, to have had a big pay drop from before the recession. So retraining helped some people, but it didn't help everybody.
The GM plant in Janesville was the oldest GM factory in operation at the time of its closing. Thousands of auto workers lost their jobs when production ended. It's the context as we talk with Amy Goldstein on the morning show. She's a Washington Post reporter, author of the book Janesville, An American Story. We're exploring the after effects a decade out from the closure as the remnants of the plant's equipment are auctioned off this week. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What did the closure of the plant mean to your family? How have you seen Janesville adjust? How has it changed? You can call in, post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll be back to the conversation very shortly here on the Ideas Network. We know that Janesville has worked hard to rebuild its economy in the aftermath of the GM plant closing in the midst of the Great Recession. At this point, with the demolition work of the plant underway, the auctioning off of the remaining heavy machinery in the plant, we're looking at how Janesville and how Rock County have endured and how people are doing today. It's our focus on this hour of the morning show. Before we go further, let's check in on our spring pledge drive, get an update from Pledge Central. And Cheryl Gasser is in the studio with me. Good morning.
Good morning, Kate.
We're here to ask you to invest a few minutes of time to support your future WPR listening.
That's right. Listener support makes up the single largest piece of funding for the programs you count on here on WPR, on the Ideas Network, and right here on The Morning Show. And that's why your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so very important.
We're looking for 15 pledges this hour. 15 pledges will do it to stay on track with our hourly goals. Make your gift to support the programs you enjoy. Be a part of that 15 and that. And so you can ensure that the programs that you rely on every day are there.
And WPR programs, they are, as we've said, listener powered. That means your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes a difference. It helps to pay for the programs you rely on.
When it comes to the Ideas Network, the expression, the best things in life are free, that doesn't hold true. Of course, on the Ideas Network, you do get high-quality conversations that enrich your life.
However, these great conversations, they are not free. It takes a lot of resources to get all of these discussions on the air.
And that is where you come in. You enjoy this high-quality talk. You support it when you make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now, you might have a monthly subscription for your cell phone and Netflix, and now we're asking you to support WPR like you pay for other services that you rely on.
The difference here, though, is that you decide how much to give. Support the programs that are a part of your day. Become a WPR sustainer. Choose a monthly gift amount that works for you, then set up ongoing installments at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We tune in to Wisconsin Public Radio for the shows we all know and love. But WPR is more than radio.
I'm Laurel White, and I am WPR's State Capitol reporter, and I am also one of three co-hosts of our weekly WPR Politics podcast. We really try to have fun with it and make it as entertaining and as accessible for people who might not be into politics, but we're also trying to consider those other political nerds out there that really want to get into the nitty-gritty and some of the fun details of the craziness that is the State Capitol.
Wisconsin Public Radio. It's more than radio. And when you give, you're a big part of what makes it all happen.
Yes, political nerds. We know a few of them at WPR. They come out of the woodwork. We know you. You can make your pledge right now. Contribute today, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with Cheryl Gasser. It is listener support that is the single biggest source of funding for the WPR programs that you rely on. And that's why your support during this spring membership drive is so important. Maybe your gift is $10 a month. Maybe it's $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount.
And if you're wondering how much you should give, well, as Kate has said, that is completely up to you. Your contribution of any amount will be turned into great programs, programs that keep you informed and entertained all year long.
And so make your pledge right now in the amount that is right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. When you do, you play an essential part in funding the programs that you count on every day.
We simply could not do what we do here at Wisconsin Public Radio without your support. We're here for you, but we're also here because of you. And we are looking this hour for 15 pledges. 15 pledges by 8 o'clock this morning. And we would love to hear from you now with your gift. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your pledge is such an important part of funding the programs that you enjoy.
Amy Goldstein has been a staff writer for 30 years at the Washington Post. Her first book, called Janesville, explores what happens to people and to the fabric of a community when thousands of good jobs evaporate. And it's high time we circle back to Janesville as the GM plant's machinery, the remaining machinery, is auctioned off this week by the site's owner. Demolition work underway this month. And that's where we pick up the conversation with Amy on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You can join in with your reactions, your perspectives 10 years out after Janesville's GM. 800-642-1234. How have you seen the Janesville community change? How do you view the struggles, the opportunities? You can call in or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Amy, Jack from Madison called. He couldn't stay on the line, but he says families split up because of the plant's closure. That way, one parent could travel to another location to work. And he says a lot of other plants hired workers from Janesville, but that meant families separated for weeks or months at a time. Did you hear that echoed in your research, in your reporting?
Absolutely. So when people had worked at General Motors itself, because most people at the plant in Janesville had very good seniority, they had transfer rights if openings became available at other General Motors plants that were still going in other parts of the country. So people took jobs in Arlington, Texas, outside Kansas City, and in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And Fort Wayne is where one of the people whose stories, one of the families I'm following over a period of years in my story, has been commuting since this early spring of 2010. Mm. And he actually is not, he lives during the week in Fort Wayne, but he leaves Janesville every Monday morning, early morning, works second shift at Fort Wayne, which is a truck making factory, and then comes home after second shift late on Friday night. So he has kind of two and a piece of nights back in his own bed with his family. These people call themselves Janesville Gypsies.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
And one of the things that I think is important is that while some families ultimately moved because, as you say, it was, you know, as your caller says, you know, it was hard for people who were working far away and they might have had young kids at home, and it's just, you know, hard to keep family life going. There were a lot of people who have done this commute, particularly people who were within just, you know, several years or a few years of eligibility for retirement, which GM workers can do after 30 years with the company. People figured, okay, I'll do these long commutes, get to 30, and then be able to retire with a good pension and benefits and settle back home in Janesville. But there are a lot of people who are still commuting to this day.
What was the role of labor unions following the closure of the GM plant?
Well, Janesville obviously has been a big United Auto Workers town. It's the home of UAW Local 95. And when I first visited Janesville. I arrived for the very first visit the summer of 2011, which was a couple of years after all this good work had vanished. I wanted to meet right away with people from the union to understand what had happened. And I was really intrigued that the union leaders at the time were retirees from General Motors, because there used to be so-called release time that people had from their jobs to do the union work, to lead the local. And there weren't any auto workers left to do that. So these were retirees who had been former union officers back in the 1990s who were doing this work as volunteers now to keep the local going. And the UAW had had a very important role in Janesville. I mean, not only was it part of the international local, international union, which negotiated the good wages and benefits that GM provided folks, but they also were a big engine of kind of philanthropy in town. You know, if you needed, if there was a fundraising, you needed some help, you would turn to the UAW because there were always people who could help. If there was, you know, even an individual family that suddenly needed help, there'd be a collection that could be taken up along the assembly line. Hmm. But the UAW had a really deep role in this community.
You've said before that the one thing you learned from Janesville is that falling out of the middle class is different from having been poor all along. Can you go into that a little bit? Explain what you mean there.
Yes. So I think that when people have been middle class and they've had jobs that, you know, were paying General Motors $28 an hour, and you might have a husband and a wife both earning those good wages, I mean, that supported a really good lifestyle. And when that income vanishes, people still want to keep up appearances. People are reluctant to take outside help. That's not to say that people who are poor all along, like getting food stamps or getting Medicaid, but it's not quite as alien a concept as if you've never imagined that you would be in this position. And I think that, you know, as part of this, I've learned that losing work is a very personal experience. It's very hard on people. Even when you lose work that thousands of people right around you are losing at the same time, at a time when the U.S. economy was as bad as it had been since any time since the Great Depression of the 1930s, people take it very personally. And I think it takes a lot of individual resilience, along with the community's resilience, which has been considerable, to try to figure out if there's ways to rebuild the economy and to provide help for people who suddenly need it, even if they're reluctant to take it. It just takes a lot of psychic strength to cope with this.
Did you find, as you were going back to Janesville again and again, did you find that there was perhaps some regret, perhaps, that so many people went the retraining route, that they went back to school, that they retrained in a totally different field instead of going out there and just trying to find a new job and reinventing their career and life in some way?
Well, I think that people went back to school with very good intentions, and not everybody succeeded at it. In fact, about a third of the people who went from factory work to, you know, losing work to being students at Black Hawk Tech ultimately finished the programs that they had started there. So it wasn't something that everybody was able to do. And some people who finished up were able to find new jobs. Another family that I follow, which was a big union family in town, the people who went back to school did find different work. It didn't pay anything like the wages they had been earning before, but they found work that was pretty meaningful to them. So some people did prevail. But I think that the really big issue was that out of this recession, jobs did not reappear as fast as they had out of previous several recessions in the United States. So there was an expectation that by the time people finished up what they were studying, if they were able to complete it, that jobs would be coming back. And that took much, much longer this time.
As we wrap up here, Amy, what can we learn, what can we take away about economic recovery at its core from what happened in Janesville, from Janesville's story?
Well, as I mentioned, I think that Janesville has a great amount of resilience within the community and the community leadership. That's not to say that it's been easy. Unemployment is way back down to, you know, what it is elsewhere in the country. I mean, at one point in 2009, it had been as high as over 13%. Now it's down below 4%. But wages aren't back, industrial jobs aren't back, and, you know, the fact that the General Motors assembly plant has now been sold and the beginning of the demolition is happening means that the economic future for Janesville is a big question mark, because the new owners, St. Louis Company that specializes in dispossessed industrial properties like Janesville's, are still in the process of trying to find other developers who are interested in doing something with the land once the big iconic factory, the Janesville Assembly Plant, is gone.
Well, Amy, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Amy Goldstein is the author of Janesville, An American Story. She's been a Washington Post reporter for 30 years. Coming up, we'll learn how the community has worked to rebuild and get people back to work. We'll look at the challenges and the opportunities there. You're with us on The Morning Show. But first, let's check in on our spring fund drive that is moving ahead. Cheryl Gasser here in the studio, and this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive. You count on the Ideas Network for interesting conversations, and we count on you to help keep these discussions on the air.
Hey, Kate, listener support, as we know, is the single largest piece of funding that makes this show and all the others that listeners enjoy possible. We heard from Susan in Amaro, who says it's one of the best places to listen and learn. Well, Susan, thank you so much for your support. Won't you join her with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're looking for a dozen pledges in the next 20 minutes. I always, when I say a dozen pledges, I always see cookies in a box in my head or an egg carton. I don't know. But, you know, be one of those eggs, right? Thank you so much, by the way, if you've already given.
And if you haven't, be a good egg. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Pledge your support because Kate makes you laugh, because you learn something new every day here on the Ideas Network. And you know that your gift will help fund the Morning Show and everything you enjoy on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Conversations like this one we're having about Janesville, about Janesville Post GM, it is so important to circle back to things in our life and to reflect. And that is what I enjoy most here on the Ideas Network, where we can take the time to take apart some of these big ideas and some of these big developments here in Wisconsin and around the nation and world, and have deeper conversations about them. This is what drives the Ideas Network. WPR is listener supported. You help make that possible. That means that when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you make this conversation and you make many more hours possible. So choose an amount that works for you, take a few minutes, and make your pledge.
And we know you care about your community, so let the impact of your pledge go beyond great radio. When you ask for the Reach Out and Read thank you gift, you give $10 a month or more.
Your thank you gift will provide books to young children during their doctor's visit, which is great for parent-child bonding and child development. Do two good things at once. Support the WPR programs you love and ask for the Reach Out and Read thank you gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We are looking for 15 pledges this hour. We've heard from 4 members so far. Thank you so much. But if we haven't heard from you, now is the time. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And thank you so much for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. When thousands of jobs disappeared in Janesville about a decade ago, many organizations, they swooped in to help the displaced GM employees. There were coalitions formed to figure out how to best help people. We're taking a look ahead now and what the future holds for Southern Wisconsin. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's bring in Gail Price. He is the Economic Development Director of the City of Janesville. Gail, welcome to the program.
Morning. Thank you.
Well, bring us up to speed on the plant site as we know it right now. We know auction going on this week. Demolition work is underway. What is the status there?
Yeah, so the plant has been bought by a St. Louis company, a commercial development corporation, with the intent of turning the site into a basically a flat developable site for new industrial production. So we're moving forward with a new future of the site, and we hope that in several years we will have new factories popping up on the site and employing people and creating tax increment for the city.
Well, you say factories, plural there. This is a 265-acre site. How long is demolition slated to take?
Yeah, it's going to be anywhere from 18 to 24 months. So it will take a while to get completed. But it's a 4.8 million square foot building. So you can imagine that is a large footprint to have to take down, and will take a while.
Has the community had any input about what this space will look like when it comes back, what this acreage will look like?
Yeah, so part of the planning process is for the public to get an opportunity to have some public input and go through a planning process. So commercial development is working on securing a consultant at this time. That consultant will develop a redevelopment plan for the property. And during that process, there will be public meetings, public hearings to allow the public to get some input. You know, from the comprehensive plan standpoint, it's already set in stone, no pun intended, that that site will be industrial. There are just too many assets for it to be something other than industrial in the view of the city. So it just really matters what kind of industrial would be appropriate at that site.
And when you say perhaps multiple factories, multiple plants, would they all be in the same realm? Would they be doing the same type of work?
No, I could imagine you could have varied types of manufacturing on the site. The site has rail service, so heavy industrial or like metal stamping and things like that would be appropriate, where you can bring in steel coils and things like that. Something that is best shipped on rail versus on trucks. So we believe that's a real asset for the site. Certainly distribution, Janesville's very strong in the distribution side. So if you had distribution that came in on rail and then was further distributed on trucks, that would be an appropriate use there too. So really the market's going to decide what's going to be those uses there in the end, and it's going to be about marketing the site to those companies.
We've heard earlier this hour, Amy Goldstein, about the challenges the city's faced following the closure over the last decade. We learned about how families even have been split apart for their work, commuting long distances to other plants, to other opportunities. She called it the Janesville Gypsies. How have you tried to keep your community together?
You know, it's amazing. There's some interesting resilience in Wisconsin, I think. I think people in Wisconsin are just, they want to work. And so they're more committed to, you know, work and their families and creating an arrangement that can weather that storm. And I think so many of the workers had, you know, strong roots here in this community that, you know, not that many of them permanently relocated. They found a way, as the Gypsies did, to make that work until they could get to a point where they could retire. So it is a very interesting dynamic. I certainly know friends that have made that commute and made that transition. And it is. It's a resilience and the fact that they are committed to this community for the long term. And so many of them have their entire family roots here. So why give that up if you don't have to?
About a decade out now from the closure, as those last vehicles came off the assembly line, did you picture Janesville and Rock County where it is now in terms of opportunities for these thousands upon thousands of former GM employees?
You know, certainly I've been here for 17 years and love the community. And, you know, when that happened, we just believed that we were in a different position than many other communities that have gone through the same thing. We're so close to Madison, Rockford, Milwaukee, that it was just a matter of banding together and creating the right plan to move forward and market the assets that we had in the community to be able to basically continue to diversify and give these people other opportunities. And we certainly are well on our way to doing that. I think there's still work to be done, but when you talk about unemployment being less than 3%, that's pretty incredible because I don't think anyone outside of Janesville really thought that that was going to happen.
Gail Price is with us. He's Economic Development Director for the City of Janesville. We're looking back over 10 years as Janesville, as Rock County, has recovered from the closure of the GM plant. And you can join this conversation. What is happening to Janesville's area to boost its economy? What's being done to support the community? Janesville residents, let us know. How do you think the community is doing today? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Gail, what has been Rock County 5.0's role in all of this?
So that's a public-private partnership that was brought together to basically devise a plan as to how we could move forward and weather this storm. So certainly there was money raised, there was a plan developed, and it really focused on building on the assets that we have in place. So and then targeting specific growth industries that we have those assets related to, and that we know are going to be growing as we move forward. So what we've done there is basically made the right investments and marketed the area and the community. Each of the communities have, done things to invest in land development and market those properties. And we've been, really quite successful. We've seen large investments in logistics. We've seen other investments in medical technology activities, and then other, engineering kind of based activities or technology based activities like Foremost Media. So, that's all part of that diversification, and then also creating opportunities for people that may not have those skills, but still need a job, i.e. The Dollar General Distribution Center that's 1 million square feet and will soon be employing over 500 people.
Gail, communities, cities have to put so many carrots out there to get companies to come to their town. The stakes are high. The incentives are rich. How has, and certainly another auto plant is pretty much off the books. I mean, just not going to happen. So how has Janesville reckoned with that in terms of what incentives it lures these companies with?
Yeah, so the city of Janesville has an established policy for industrial development that basically if you look at the numbers, you can roughly a napkin number, you can figure 20% of the value of the project can be the incentive for the company, and that can take a number of different shades. And so it's really about looking at, what those numbers are and what are the job creations. So if we, as in Wisconsin, we just don't have that many tools in our toolbox, unlike states like Ohio and Indiana, who have a lot more tools in their box. We have to, stick to, our policy and work through that. So it is challenging at times because when you're competing against other states that may have programs that are more robust than what we have, then it's about location and you keep your fingers crossed that you're in the right location. And certainly that has helped us considering we can get so many markets here in one day drive. So it is challenging. And certainly, everyone, points to Foxconn when you talk about rich incentives for a project.
Gail Price, when you look in your crystal ball, what's ahead for Janesville when you look into the future?
Continued growth and diversification. And it's very exciting to think about because we have companies now that are moving here because we're in the right location. We have good quality workforce where they're educated. And, you know, we have, for instance, a company called Shine Medical Technologies, which hopes to be making Moly 99 within a couple of years, which is a very important medical isotope for medical testing and heart testing and things like that. To think that we have diversified that much to the point where we can land a startup medical company that is so far on the cutting edge of technology is, you know, it's astounding. It's exciting to think that we're going to continue to move forward in that way, and that's going to continue to diversify the economy. And then when the next recession comes, we're going to be in good shape.
Well, Gail, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be watching.
Excellent. Thank you.
Gail Price is Economic Development Director for the City of Janesville. He joined us to look at what's ahead for Janesville as demolition moves forward on the former GM plant. The author of Janesville, An American Story, Amy Goldstein, joined us earlier in the hour to look back at how Janesville fared when the GM plant in the city closed. This hour of the morning show was produced by Breanne Shasso and Keely Baltina. Michael Derringer provided technical direction, and Michelle Johnson is executive producer. And let's turn now to get an update on our spring membership drive. Cheryl Gasser in the studio here as well. Good morning.
Good morning, Kate.
And the single largest source of funding for WPR programs is from listeners like you. This drive is your chance to support all the programs you listen to throughout the year. So take that step when you donate at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you can make a difference. You can help us reach our hourly goal of 15 pledges this hour. When you make your gift, it is so important because when you give, you're supporting the programs that you rely on every day, programs like The Morning Show.
And thank you so much, by the way, if you've already given a sincere thanks. If you haven't, the time is now. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, we've been talking this hour about the past, present, and future of Janesville. Connecting the state and covering Wisconsin is one of the things that WPR is all about. And WPR is also listener supported. And that means when you do the math, when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you make the conversations possible. You make this show possible. So choose an amount that works for you. Take a few minutes and make that pledge.
This spring drive, we have a special opportunity. You can ask for the Reach Out and Read thank you gift when you give $10 a month or more.
Your thank you gift will provide books to young children during their wellness doctor visits. Donate now and you'll support WPR programs that you rely on. And Wisconsin kids will get a good start in literacy at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
At Wisconsin Public Radio, we ask you to decide how much to give. And no matter what you choose, you get 24 hours a day of news, talk, music, and entertainment in return. That's a great deal. Where do you wish you could get that deal?
I'd love to go to the record store and name my price for a lot of the albums I see.
If I could pick and choose for shoes, that would be fantastic.
Netflix, streaming options, music, and a weekend cocktail, too.
During this pledge drive, we ask you to contribute as generously as you can. And unlike with other things, you'll always be the one to decide how much to give.
Love that transparency there. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your donation. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with Cheryl Gasser, raising the money that keeps Wisconsin Public Radio and all the programs that you enjoy on the air. And whether your pledge is $10 a month, whether it is $100 a month, we appreciate and we count on your gift.
And if you are a sustaining member, we want to thank you so very much. You can make today the day that you increase your support of WPR by maybe $5 or $10 a month, whatever amount you choose. Go ahead and increase that sustaining membership at WPR.org
or 888-202-2552.
We heard from Kate in Madison. Great name there, Kate. I listen to WPR every day on my way to work. I feel my contribution to WPR is long overdue. Kate says, I value the in-depth and unbiased coverage from NPR and WPR news programs. Thank you so much for your support. It's powerful. It makes a difference at WPR.org. And thanks for your support.